current state on WKAR. A new computer tool is helping official planners and even just people who are interested in the Great Lakes actually see what varying water levels do to the shorelines. The application was developed for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Organization, or NOAA, Atmospheric Administration, I'm sorry, NOAA, by Doug Marcy. He's a coastal hazards specialist at NOAA's Office for Coastal Management in Charleston, South Carolina. I talked to him last week about what this new tool can do.
The Lake Level Viewer designed to be kind of a complementary tool to the Great Lakes Water Level Dashboard that was developed by the Great Lakes Environmental Research Lab. And that was developed to look at historical water levels on all the lakes. What have the water levels been doing over time? It's just a, through observation gauge network, they collect information and they look at monthly averages and they look at monthly averages going back into the about 1918, and look at the long-term averages to see how the lakes have behaved. And what they're trying to do is look at trends to see what could happen in the future. But there was no way to really visualize the impacts of flooding over land for any particular location. We have water levels that go up and down in the Great Lakes. So it's not just a flooding issue, it's also a low water issue. So
Right. There
wasn't a tool available to visualize what the potential impacts of these higher and low water events could be. We've had in the past, I think 2013, there was some pretty historical low water events going on, especially in like Lake Huron, Lake Michigan. Folks were still really starting to get concerned about navigation issues. You know, the some of the commercial tankers and whatnot can't carry as much payload if they're or cargo if water levels are lower. Because they wouldn't be able to navigate the channels. So, and then, of course, now, you know, a couple years later, we're looking at historical high water levels. So there's a lot of interest in being able to figure out what the areas that are going to be impacted. And so we spent time developing the tool using some funds from the President's Great Lakes Restoration Initiative to help with showing the areas that will be potentially new land will be created with low water levels, and then areas that will be potentially having flood issues with high water levels. And it relates those water levels to the historical averages. So folks will have a sort of a reference frame, and they can see what the high and the low water levels have been in the past and how that compares to what the current level is, and see visually what could be impacted.
I want to make sure that I understand this right. We all know that the Great Lakes vary, like you said, you know, some years they've been low and that's been a concern, usually more so than when they're high. But then there's the issue of long-term climate change. Now, does this kind of deal with those two things in conjunction, or is it more focused on one or the other?
It's really more focused on looking at connecting the historical water levels and showing what could be impacted. But it also was designed to be kind of a conversation starter for what could happen in the future. In other words, what's going to happen with the Great Lakes in terms of the water levels based on climate change is a little bit uncertain still. The National Climate Assessment just came out this past year, the third National Climate Assessment, and the Upper Midwest chapter talked about, you know, what is going to happen with the Great Lakes. And there's a lot of uncertainty still with what climate change is going to do to the Great Lakes. The previous climate assessment talked about the water levels could potentially be impacted a lot by climate change, but the newer climate assessment that just came out says there's still a great deal of uncertainty in some of the modeling and how the Great Lakes will respond. So there was not really a definite they will go up or they will go down. But whatever the case may be, this we designed to be more of a scenario tool. If you chose a scenario where the lakes were going to go up in the future, you could see the impact. You could download the data and start to do some analysis of what is in those areas, those flooding zones or those inundation areas, to start to do some kind of like vulnerability assessment type studies. Same thing for if water levels go down, you can start to see, well, how much area of shoreline will be exposed? What is that going to do for, you know, potential increasing habitat or decreasing habitat, depending, you know, for ecosystems? And what is it going to do in our navigation channels? And then sort of a side effect or byproduct of developing this is we've put together a comprehensive elevation data set something that's called a digital elevation model that has both topography, which is elevations over land, and bathymetry, which is elevations under the water, together in a seamless, what we call a topobathy product. It's the first time we've done that comprehensively for the U.S. Great Lakes coast. And by doing that, we've identified data gap areas, which will help us determine where do we need to collect data in the future to fill those gaps.
One thing I've observed over the years, and this is very subjective as an observation, but it seems like whereas people are conscious of hazards like fire, you know, make sure your smoke alarms have batteries, or, you know, listening for weather reports if there's going to be a tornado or something, it seems like building in flood-prone areas or areas that are erosion-prone, like, you know, a sand dune on a Great Lakes shoreline, doesn't seem to be as much on people's radar. Do you find that? And if so, what do you attribute that kind of resistance?
Well, I think part of it is people that may not have the historical knowledge that there have been problems there in the past. They may be moving in from an area that they're not familiar with. Coastal hazards, we deal with this on the ocean coast as well. We have people that are moving to areas that have never experienced, for instance, hurricanes or coastal storms in the wintertime, where we get storm surges and high waves that can cause erosion. They just may not be familiar with that. And then we are starting, I think, to become more aware of some of these hazards. Certainly areas that are susceptible to flooding, in a lot of cases, if you buy a house or build a house, if you're in a flood-prone area or in a flood zone, your mortgage requires you to buy flood insurance. So you have to participate in the National Flood Insurance Program if you're actually in a flood-prone area. So that's a clue that you potentially could be impacted by a flood. I know along the Great Lakes, there's more of an issue with bluff erosion, and that can be maybe a perception that, oh, we're safe, we're up on this bluff, but over time, the bluff can fail and cause issues, and next thing you know, they're dealing with, you know, the bluff being right next to their back door.
Right.
So it's a common issue on both the Great Lakes coast and the U.S. coast. I think that when people go to purchase a home or build a home, they assume that the calm conditions that they're the day they visit are just going to be that way all the time. And of course, we know that these major storms can cause an immense amount of water to move and cause a lot of damage and erosion. So I think maybe trying to educate people that these events can happen. They have happened in the past. Photographs that can show historical events, mapping that shows areas that were flooded in the past can be used. I think obviously if a home has been flooded or impacted before, there's a disclosure rule that needs to be, you know, that real estate agent has to disclose that there has been a flood. And you can actually look into if it has had a flood policy in the past, if there's ever been a claim on that as well.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't realize that was a resource. As a lifelong Michigan native, I have to say that it's kind of sobering to see some representations of how our coasts might change over time. And you're in Charleston, South Carolina, I believe, which is, of course, right on the coast. Have you seen renditions of what a rise in sea levels would look like in your area? And describe what that's like for you personally. I mean, as somebody who, you know, the Michigan people take their lakes pretty seriously, and obviously, you know, you live on the ocean, so you must take it pretty seriously.
Yes, we do take it very seriously, because in Charleston, our tourism is our number one source of income. Economy is driven by it. Of course, because we're a historical city, we've the birthplace where the Civil War started. And, you know, it's a very old city, so I'm seeing evidence just as long as I've lived in Charleston, which is over close to 18, 20 years now, of increasing sea levels. You see areas where the infrastructure was built so long ago, for instance, the stormwater system now can't handle significant rain events when the tide is high. When the tide is high and filling the storm drains, the water cannot exit out into the ocean because there's not enough gravity there to feed it. And so we get a lot of flooding. We get a lot of flooding just from high tides. So when we've done mapping of this area, we see that, yes, there are definitely vulnerable areas that are very low-lying, and those are the areas that are going to be, we're starting to see impacts now. It's actually happening, you know, in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very concerning, and we've worked with the engineers here in Charleston to start to address. They're trying to, having to retrofit some of the stormwater systems to put in pump outs to be able to, you know, force the water out during these events. So that's part of the adaptation process of knowing this is going to be happening, especially in our low-lying cities, have to start to develop ways to mitigate the increasing flooding that we're going to see. Because sea level rise and, you know, change in lake levels is essentially just an exacerbator of the existing hazard. We're still going to have coastal storms. We're still going to have wave impacts. We're going to have these major events. But sea level is just kind of creeping up over a long period of time. And so every event we have will just get a little bit worse. Just the water, it's kind of riding in on a little bit higher water.
Right.
So we see events that may 50 years ago not have been as much of an impact, and today they are. And that's going to, I think, increase in the future.
Well, Doug Marcy, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.